Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. Today we have David Horowitz with us. David is a longtime figure in the world of politics and culture, author of many, many books. I won't go through them. His book, Radical Son, which came out in the mid-late 90s, I believe, actually is, I think, one of the most important, I actually would put it as one of the most important memoirs of the 20th century. Especially in David's firsthand witness of the old and new left running from the 50s through the 80s, and is I think an important book that's going to last. He's been writing many things since then. A close observer of political correctness in higher education and in the culture at large, he has a book that has just come out, and that will be the topic for today. But first of all, David, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, the book here is called Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. There you have, right up front. The book is published by Humanix Books, publisher, and can be found there at their website. So Humanix, H-U-M-A-N-I-X. And let's get to the title. The War to Destroy Christian America. Strong language. Why are we going to call this? Why do we call the sort of ordinary secular lack of interest in religion, or the sort of the 20th century liberal idea of sort of containing religion so it doesn't turn into a form of proselytization in our schools and in our courtrooms and elsewhere. Why do we want to up this to war?
Yeah, the first thing is the title, Christian America. That's one entity. I used to think that the attacks on Christianity were a parochial issue. And I was sympathetic, of course, to religious people because they deserve actually more respect than the secularists of the left who have done so much damage to this country. But in the course of doing this book, I was asked to do this book. I realized that every value that we hold dear as Americans, every principle, equality, inclusion, even diversity, pluralism, tolerance, were all Christian values and Christian ideas. And they all originated with Christians. It's very important. Before the Reformation, and it's with Protestant Christians, America could only have been created by Protestant Christians, could not have been created by Catholics. There aren't enough Jews if they had that impulse, and I'm not 100% sure they would. It certainly couldn't be created by Muslims. Before the Reformation, you could only get to heaven by going through the Catholic Church and its priesthood. It was anointed as the true church. It was, you know, the quintessential establishment, if you will. But, of course, the church, as Protestants realized, I mean, that's what the revolt was about, is a human institution. Therefore, it's subject to all the corruptions that human beings are wedded to. And capable of. And, you know, you saw it in the selling of indulgences. It was a great worldly power. Dostoevsky has written quite a damning portrait of the Roman Church in the Brothers Karamazov. But the Protestant idea, my late friend Christopher Hitchens, who was the most entertaining of the new atheists, although I think he it really distressed me how he wasted the end of his days in a war with God, of all things. But he had it exactly upside down, as leftists generally do. The subtitle of his book, God is Not Great, is how religion poisons everything.
Poisons everything.
Actually, it's people who poison religion. Now, that's the key, and that's the division between left and right, as I will come back to. The Protestant Reformation, the central idea, well, there were actually two. One is salvation by faith. And what that means is that their perception that we're all sinners, that there's nobody who is worthy of getting into heaven. So you only get into heaven through God's grace. And that's, you know, that's how we have checks and balances. Because the founders, being Protestants, understood that the danger, the cause of all social problems, is not some fiction called society. Who creates society after all? It's us. We're the problem, and that's why you can't really fix the world.
It's not the system with a capital S? The establishment with a capital E?
No, because it's people. No, and you can't fix it because the people who want to fix it, as we can see now that the Democratic Party has become a kind of, you know, crypto-communist party, they're idiots, they're ignorant, and they're hypocritical, they're liars, and they're unbelievably vicious and vindictive.
David, how would...
How are they going to make a better world?
Well, first of all, I would say, how would Christopher Hitchens and other revolutionary dreamers respond if you said to them, you're not anti-religious, you just have a different religion, a pernicious one, but it has all the features of a religion. How would they respond? We know that, but how would they respond to that?
I think that Christopher would admit that.
He would.
He was a very interesting person, Christopher.
But what would they do about their own dogmas then? Because, I mean, one of the fundamental points of liberalism is we loosen up.
You're making a fundamental mistake in your presumption that people are rational.
People aren't rational? No.
Anyway, the truly revolutionary idea of the Protestant Reformation was the priesthood of all believers. That's what they called it. So what they did is they stripped the Catholic priesthood of its authority. They said that each individual faces his or her creator one-on-one without an intermediary, whether it's a church or a government. Because, of course, I mean, part of the corruption of any religion by human beings is symbolized in Henry VIII, who got tired of executing wives because they didn't give them heirs, and changed the religion of England overnight and made this the established religion. The priesthood of all believers creates immediately an equality, including blacks, including slaves. All of them are God's creatures and equal in the eyes of God, and therefore must be equal in the eyes of government. And of course, within the first 15 years of this incredible country, which is now so severely under attack, and such a slanderous campaign. I think of Cory Booker saying we have to get rid of the bigotries in the Constitution. And saying, what planet is he on? What bigotries? It doesn't mention race. It doesn't use the words black or white. But this idea of the priesthood of all believers, the Protestant idea, liberated blacks within a generation. 15 years, the North is free, and then it's another 60 years, 65 years, to free the slaves. Every American should be proud of America's record on slavery. The slaves were enslaved by black African slavers and bought at auction. And it was white Protestant Americans who abolished slavery.
Do you know, David, that when I'm teaching Frederick Douglass or Booker T. Washington, for that matter, and I let students know when they talk about American slavery that slavery existed in every continent on Earth. Slavery has been a normal part of human existence since the earliest recorded times. Slavery was not unusual. It was very common. And the abolition of slavery is actually the remarkable thing that happened. And again, as you put it, when we look at the full span of human history, it happened in a pretty darn short period of time.
Very, very short, would you consider?
And I point to the same thing with the civil rights movement. The transformation of racial attitudes from 1955 to 1975 is, again, extraordinary.
Unprecedented revolution, isn't it?
Now, one thing I want to do, I want to point to a point in your book. You talk about the wall of separation, and you refer to the 1962 landmark case about religious liberty, you say, known as Engel versus Vital. It was a Supreme Court case. And you say the suit was brought by a group of five liberals, three Jews, and two self-described spiritual people. They complained that a brief voluntary prayer written by the New York Board of Regents addressed to, quote, Almighty God violated their, quote, religious beliefs, even though some were atheists. The prayer was to be read every day at the opening of school. This is the full 23-word text of the prayer. Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon thee, and we beg thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country. Amen. Now, the plaintiff said that they were part of the ACLU, represented by the ACLU, and Egil himself was a founding member of the local ACLU, and they had lost their case in three state courts. And the New York State Supreme Court actually delivered a very commonsensical decision saying it is ridiculous that preventing this school prayer would, quote, be such a violation would be in defiance of all American history. Such a holding would destroy a part of the essential foundation of the American governmental structure. And I tend to think they were right. And the prayer was voluntary. And it wasn't sectarian in any way. It was very broad, very vague.
When you think about what is the Supreme Court? It's nine lawyers appointed for life by politicians. Now, how could that go wrong? But this is a direct assault on America. I go through a series of these decisions. You can't get educated in the public schools about the foundations of our democracy. You can't tell students that the pilgrims were Christians. You can't tell them that the first Thanksgiving was to give Thanksgiving to God. You can't tell them that the Hopi Indians pray to Mother Earth, but you can't say that Christians pray to God. This is a viciously anti-Christian, anti-American movement. It's called progressivism or communism or socialism or Marxism or Cortezism, all the same. And everybody running, of course, Biden is a sort of a jerk, apologetic jerk, but all the others have this vision, which is as hostile to America as we have ever had. They want a fantasy. They want heaven on earth. They want to create a paradise out of their own corruptions.
Well, David, let me ask you, what is the motivation behind these kinds of lawsuits, such as the Engel one or the recent lawsuit about a statue of Jesus on some public land in the middle of nowhere? Why does it bother them? Why not just look in the other way or just ignore the prayer?
Every progressive is a totalitarian. They want to change the world bottom to top. Look, you take the recent cases, barring Chick-fil-A at an airport. Why? Because they give money to organizations that promote their ideas, period. Yale just ruled that if you belong, I can't remember if you belong or if you support the Alliance to Defend Freedom, which is a group that defends religious freedom, you can't have any financial support from the university. This is Yale Law School. So we know exactly what the intent is. It's to create a one-party state, which is that's what totalitarianism is. They want to shut down. I mean, we see that. I mean, I can't go to a campus anymore. But if you go to a campus, they just turn your event into a circus. There's no dialogue. There's a dwindling number of aging conservative professors that prefer purge the faculties. I mean, this is the future of America. This is the left's war is aimed at the most fundamental right we have. Aristotle said that courage is the most important virtue, because without courage, you can't defend the others. If you don't have freedom of conscience and freedom of expression, you can't defend any of your freedoms. And if you look at the Democratic Party program today, they want to get rid of the Electoral College, which is in the Constitution. They don't want borders. They want illegals to vote. They want to lower the voting age. Probably they would be happy if it was 6 or 7, but they're starting with 16 now. you know, you could just go on and on. They don't want IDs. So they don't care who votes. They want felons to vote. And that's because they want their agenda without opposition. And this, they've conducted a, first of all, it's the first attempted coup d'etat in the history of this country, run by the intelligence agencies, by the FBI and Brennan. And this is the most frightening period in American history, aside from the actual Civil War.
You know, it's astonishing to me how people aren't all that upset when they hear that the city council of San Antonio or some state legislators in New York get Chick-fil-A barred from being in the San Antonio airport or the Buffalo airport. It's almost if these things just get shrugged off. And, you know, when you are taking the economic rights away on the basis of a disagreement over a donation the company gave to a legitimate enterprise, this is illiberalism fundamental.
It's fascism. That's what they are. I mean, it's not mince words here. Cortez's, the Green New Deal that all the Democrats are supporting, that's not socialism. That's communism. Let's see. How many cars do you think there are that use gas? 300 million? 250 million? Okay, so they tell you the world is coming to an end in 12 years exactly if we don't do something. So here we have 10 years to change the world. How do you think you could do that without instituting a police state? You can't. People aren't going to give up their cars. They're not going to take the financial hit. They already chose not to have Priuses, and even a Prius would be banned. But, you know, conservatives are so damn polite. It's just so frustrating. They don't want to embarrass their enemies by calling them out for what they are. Did Bernie Sanders, you think Denmark is his model? Did he choose to have his honeymoon in Copenhagen? And are his heroes King Frederick II and Anders Rasmussen, the prime minister of Denmark? No, they're Mao and Castro. Bloody monsters and Stalin. That's Bernie Sanders.
And he went and he did his honeymoon in
Moscow, the height, you know, in the heyday of the Soviet slave empire. That's who Bernie Sanders is. Disgusting human being. And I mean, he's honest. He's a big liar, like they all are.
Where are the Democrats in the old Hubert Humphrey Scoop Jackson model?
Let's see. There are two liberals left. One is Alan Dershowitz, and the other is Joe Lieberman. Maybe the third is a guy. Saw a guy on the other day. Seemed fairly reasonable. Of course, as you go down the ranks, it tends to get people get a little more reasonable. But the leadership of the Democratic Party—it's a communist party. My parents were communists. My parents were probably milder than Nancy Pelosi. What a piece of work she is.
How will the identity politics, we know how the identity politics plays into the war on religious liberty that you've talked about.
Right, where they passed laws, these Democrats, these fascists, that allow you to kill a child that's already been born. I never thought I'd live to see that. I just, you know.
And they illuminated the Empire State Building in a triumphalist self-congratulation.
Abortion is not a woman's right to choose. Women make many choices before they come to that choice. They have to choose to have sex. They have to choose who to have sex with. They have to choose whether to have protected or unprotected sex. And this, of course, is if they haven't been raped. And then they have the final choice. You're pregnant. You can't afford the child. You don't want, it's an inconvenience, whatever. The killing is murder. It's just murder. And the Democratic Party embraces it. It's an incredibly dangerous party. And I think it would be less dangerous if more Republicans would call them to account.
Why aren't there any pro-life leaders in the Democratic Party anymore?
Because when Roe v. Wade was passed, and by the way, the weird historical fact I learned from David Garrow's book. But not only was the fake legal argument devised by Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, but the plaintiffs with his Austin Texas University chapter of SDS. Perfect.
And they were going to take the idea is that on something like this, on abortion, any pro-life people on our side are a problem. They in terms of the Democratic Party purifying itself.
Yeah, well, they have allowed Casey to be in it. It happened right after Roe v. Wade. They just shut it down. They drove the Catholic base of the Democratic Party into the Republican Party. They created the religious right. And they're, and the religious right elected first Reagan and then Trump. So a lot of this book I've written, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America, is how we got to this incredible split in the country. The Democratic Party is a totalitarian party and it's a racist party. Identity politics is a pure form of racism. You judge people first by their color and then their gender and then their sexual orientation. It's completely ludicrous. We now have, I can't even watch the news these days. Here you have this Bernie Sanders devious woman, Flores, trying to knock off Biden by complaining that he touched her head 5 years ago without her permission.
Now, why did this come forward? They want Biden out of the mix?
It's so bizarre. I mean, to be a, to try to be a political thinker in this context is just, it's so dispiriting.
I've heard that the Trump people regard Bernie as the, maybe this was before Biden got involved, but they regard Bernie as the most dangerous opponent. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think it will not be true if they expose Bernie for who he is. They let Obama, who is a communist, get away with it. If they let Bernie get away with it, if they treat him as a populist, they're populist.
I wonder if the Democratic Party will allow a white male at the top of the ticket in 2020.
Oh, of course they will. They will snipe at him. But look, it's a communist party. Winning is everything. They'll suppress anything that endangers their chances of winning. They want the power. And if they get the power, look out, conservatives. They got the gulags already.
Well,
compunction. When I said they'd have to establish a police state just to get rid of the automobiles, they might have no compunction about doing that because they're saving the world. And I think this is the big idea. Since First Things is a very intellectual magazine, we should notice that this is an old Christian heresy. It's called Pelagianism. Pelagius was a Christian monk who lived in the 4th century AD. And Pelagius believed that that sin is against human nature. So if we're true to our nature, we will be good Christians. And if we're good Christians, we can create the Ocasio-Cortez paradise on earth. We can create the kingdom of heaven on earth without God. And it was Augustine who was really the godfather of modern conservatism who said that, no, we can't because we all partake of original sin. And that sin is Adam's determination to defy God, to rebel. Let's remember that Saul Alinsky, The Bible of the Left, the dedication of his book is to the first rebel, which is Lucifer. Eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which means you have to know evil. And the serpent, how does the serpent seduce Adam?
You'll become as gods.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You shall be as God. And that is what every leftist thinks and why they are monsters when they get the power. That's how they killed 100 million people. All these well-meaning leftist intellectuals went along with it and supported it and, you know, wrote up apologetics for it.
Okay, this explains why we would have a war on Christianity, because Christianity keeps us from conceiving of ourselves as gods and creating a heaven on earth.
It induces humility. I mean, they mock prayer. Why do they mock people? You know, my book, Dark Agenda, opens with the massacre in the Christian church. And you have all these, you know, late night talk show hosts and whatnot mocking people praying for the families. What is prayer? You know, I'm an agnostic, so, you know, I wish I could pray, but I can't. But it doesn't take rocket science to know that the first thing that praying does is it induces a feeling of humility. And that's the left lacks that completely. If you understand that human beings are flawed and that it can't be fixed for that reason, because your top cop is going to be a James Comey or a J. Edgar Hoover or a Brennan. These are awful people. You can't trust them. They lie. And they will look what they did. I mean, Manafort is not an innocent man, but he certainly didn't deserve what he's getting. Those are the people who are going to save you.
Let me ask you a final question. Do you think the war on Christianity by the left is a political winner in the next 5 years?
You know, I have to think that the American people are going to win this one. And I have to think if it's a big enough landslide that sensible Democrats, and there are some, will come to the fore. That's my optimism for the day.
All right. Thank you, David.
All right. Thank you, Mark.